Hey, welcome once again to the Andy Stanley Leadership Podcast, a conversation designed to help leaders go further, faster. I'm Andy Stanley, and today I'll be your host because we are continuing our conversation with my friend Horst Schulze on the topic of how to create world-class service in your organization. Once again, thanks so much for being here, Horst.
Great.
As I mentioned last month, Horst is the chairman and CEO of the Capella Hotel Group, and he is a legend. He is truly a legend in the service world. He ran operations for Ritz-Carlton Hotel Company for a little over 19 years, and that's where we first met. We talked a little bit about that last month. Under his watch, the Ritz-Carlton Group was awarded the Malcolm Baldrige National Quality Award in 1992 and 1999, the first and only hotel company to win that award. Now, Horst, last month we talked about the process of creating employee excellence. It was fabulous. If you missed last month's podcast, you really need to go back and listen. But today, we're going to talk about what customers want, why they want it, and how to respond to what a customer wants. Because you believe, at the end of the day, this really is what drives the service industry. And you have somewhat of a formula, and I would love for you to just begin talking about that whole process as you think about satisfying customers and customer satisfaction.
Well, all thinking of the organization should be geared towards what the market wants. If I'm delivering to the market a product which is to the market more sufficient, and if I'm at the same time am more efficient, with other words, I deliver that product and cost me less, but it satisfies the guest more, then obviously I have a great company.
Right.
So, and really, the company, in my opinion, a great company does four things. It, number one, and it cannot be encroached on by two, three, and four. Number one is keeping the customer. Let's face it, if you have loyal customers, you have a great organization. Now, we have to understand here that there are three types of customers. They're the ones that are dissatisfied, which essentially are terrorists against your company. They don't like you. They look forward to talk bad about you.
Right.
They're negative. They're destructive. They're dangerous. So on a scale of 1 to 10 in service, that's what it is. And 1 to 3 are dangerous. But 3 to 8 are satisfied. And if your competition offers a little teddy bear free, that's where they're going to go. They're not your customers. They're satisfied. And then they're the loyal customers. They're yours. In fact, they're willing to pay more for your product, the same product. They're your customers. So number one, you keep the customer. Number two, you get new ones, obviously, hopefully through the old customers, through the loyal customers. Number three, what you do as an organization, get as much money as you can. That's the business you're in. Otherwise, you won't be in business. Your employees won't have a job. Number four, what you do is be efficient. And that's really what you do. So how do you keep this customer? By giving the customer more sufficiently what they want. Now, what do they want? You know, this comes all together. If that is true, and we have to admit that must be true, then I have to know what the customer wants. So what do they want? Well, here's the fascinating thing. They all want the same thing. We don't have to study that.
Every customer wants the same thing.
That's right.
In every industry,
in every industry, for every product, for everything. If you buy a house or a bottle of water and so on, you have the same subconscious expectation.
Every customer wants the same thing.
That's right.
And you're about to tell us what those are.
That's right.
So how valuable is this information you're about to give us? I would say very valuable. Well,
very valuable.
Okay.
And I spend a lot of money getting it.
And I know that people pay you a lot of money for this information. So
that's
thank
right.
you for sharing it with us.
That's
so
right.
What is it that ultimately that every customer wants?
Now hold on and let it sink in and not dismiss it.
Okay.
The thing is, I'm going to give you facts. So if somebody doesn't agree, it means they're wrong.
Okay.
It's really that simple. Every customer, you individual, whoever that is, let's say you buy a bottle of water or a house or a car or whatever it is or a hotel stay, you want really subconsciously have three expectations. The expectation is number one, that the product is defect free. So if it's bottles of water that you sell, you want to make sure it doesn't leak, it is filled all the way, that it's closed properly, etc. You have to create processes so it's defect-free. Number two, what you want is timeliness. When you buy the bottle, when you buy the bottle of water, you expect it to be defect-free. You wanted to have it in time. Waiting is it's very destructive if people have to wait. So you want it when you want it. And number three, what you want is that the people who give it to you, that they're nice to you. Hmm. And let's call that service for a moment. So, and here is the interesting thing. Those three things I can create processes around so that it happens. And we talked about the process of nice people, the right employee we talked about last time.
Right, last month.
Now, if caring is that important, and we have to understand clearly that that caring piece, that nice piece, is drives customer satisfaction, eventually loyalty, more than anything else.
So say that again. So the interaction with the person selling the product or the person that represents the company is the most important.
Absolutely.
Is the most important thing in terms of driving not just customer satisfaction, but customer loyalty.
Eventually loyalty,
right.
Yes. Yeah, you know, if you can at the same time, because besides those three elements which everybody have, you have your idiosyncrasies.
Among customers.
You want a bottle of water that is this large or whatever. So you have to have systems to react to the idiosyncrasies, that to the individualization and personalization of the product. And by the way, more and more people say, do it my way. Mm-hmm. It is not anymore a standardization. They said, do it my way. And when we talk about the millennials today, they are very, very strong in saying, do it my way. So you have to be able to react to the individual too. If you have that, if you do that, now you're satisfying that customer. If you can individualize and personalize, then it moves faster from satisfaction to loyalty.
And this is something the Ritz-Carlton company was excellent at. By the time you got there, you felt like they knew you. There was so much data, especially if you were a return customer.
Sure.
And this was your idea. And I would guess is what really moved people from simply being satisfied to loyal. I want to go back there. Yeah. I feel as if they know me. They don't know too much about me. That can get creepy, but they knew enough about me to it became somewhat of a personalized experience.
Yeah, but this caring piece, by the way, is look, we talk about that in minutes. I can teach that for hours. For example, how do they know we care? Well, the being as we all know, to be ignored is the greatest sin that you can do to people. That hurts more than scolding somebody, ignoring them. So the decision by the customer about you is made the instant the customer feel that they made contact with you.
I say that again. That's powerful.
The decision about your company and you and your employees,
right,
by the way, is made the instant the customer feel that they made contact with you. Other words, when they see your building, for example,
that's
your
what
entrance.
They remember.
It has a powerful impact on it. But the most powerful impact is the first instant they make contact with your human being of your organization. By the way, that happens to be between 12 and 9 feet.
Wow. So say that again. So say it one more time. And this is, so you're talking about actual physical proximity and timeliness. Now, we're talking about the first 10 to 15 seconds.
I said instant.
Yeah. The first instant. 9 to 12 feet.
9 to 12 feet. So with other words, we teach our employees, no matter what you're doing, if the guest comes between 9 and 12 feet of you, you look up and you say, welcome. Even if you're on the phone, wave to them. Do not ignore them, whatever you do.
Now, how did you come up with this? Was this from your experience?
Surveys.
Surveys.
Yeah.
Through surveying, you discovered there's this proximity piece, 9 to 12 feet, demands a response. Otherwise,
it
feels like they're being ignored.
Being ignored.
And the worst thing that can happen is for a customer to potentially be ignored.
We are again speaking here about subconscious feeling, which is more powerful than the conscience.
Right.
So now they have made contact. Now they made a decision about you. We talk always, and society lies at people all the time. Oh, you have to wait and look. Wait a minute. I can't look skin deep. Because I only pass them for a second and I make a decision, I can't help, I made a decision. I can change later that decision by relationship. But the decision is made subconscious. You are caring or not. You're paying attention. You think that I, the customer, am important or not. So you have to tell them you're an important customer.
The first instant, 9 to 12 feet.
There's an interesting thing here. When I teach that to some groups, they say, well, we are B2B, business to business.
Oh, gotcha. Right.
Silly statement. There is a human being in your company who talks to a human being in the other company, and the opinion about the other company, about your company, is because of that human being. Simple. So there's still this same thing is taking place. Here, contact and making the guests feel important, making the guests feel care, making the guests feel as if we really want to help them with our product and not just push it on them.
Horace, this is absolutely fascinating, and the thing is, we could talk for a couple of hours about each of these three. I want to back up just a second. So in terms of what does the customer want, the customer wants defect-free, timely, and caring. We talked a good bit about caring. Let's back up a little bit and talk about the customer wants defect-free. And again, this has to be translated through specific industries, companies, banking, whatever it might be.
Yes.
So in general terms, talk a little bit more about defect-free and then the timely piece of this.
Yeah. Well, let me just get the timely piece out of the way. And for example, because it's such a major issue today, for example, we knew when we opened our first Ritz-Carlton, here the Buckhead Ritz-Carlton was the first one. When we opened that, we knew that when there was a line in the evening for check-in, business time, business check-in, and they waited no more than 4 minutes, they were okay. So we watched it. After 3 minutes, we went out with a drink and served them a drink and so on. So they would be fine, wouldn't get angry. Today, it's 20 seconds.
20 seconds.
20 seconds.
So you went from 3 minutes to 20 seconds.
To 20 seconds.
Because people were...
Timeliness is a major issue. We have to understand that. So we have to create processes to be sure we can serve people fast.
Now, did you discover that time frame had shrunk?
Because complaints.
So you just watch body language.
They get annoyed. I mean, if they wait longer than 20 seconds, they're annoyed already.
That is amazing. And now here's an interesting point, because it would be easy, going back to our last month's discussion about managers and leaders, I guess the manager at that point says, well, that's just the way it is. I mean, come on, let's be realistic. The leader says, no. If the customer gets annoyed at 20 seconds, we've got to be there in 19 seconds.
That's right. The manager will have all kinds of excuses. Well, it's our employees. If we don't have enough employees and the weather is bad, the manager says all kinds of... Leader said, doesn't matter. I will deliver what the guest wants. And so timeliness is an issue. But defect-free, let me relate to hotel. The guest doesn't want... to have the TV changed and the battery is burned out. That would be a major defect. The lifestyle wants to watch the TV, that would be a major defect. The room, everything's fine. Or a bulb is burned out, or anything, or a scratch in the wall. All those are defects. Or a car that doesn't start, that's a defect. But let's go back to the car. You buy a car, what do you expect? Again, the same thing. No defect, timeliness, and the people care for you and carry it through there, make you feel important and respect you for what you're buying and so on. You drive out of the driveway of the dealership and 100 yards down, it breaks down. That's a major defect. What happens here? You go back and they say, please forgive me. We immediately take it as has never happened before. You will forgive him. You see, the service piece is stronger than the defect.
Gotcha. That's powerful. Because there's going to be unintended consequences. There are defects. The world's not perfect. But your point is, and I think any of us who've stayed in a Ritz-Carlton or have intersected with any of your businesses would say, you're exactly right. It's the response to the defect that determines whether I'm dissatisfied, satisfied, or remain loyal.
Can
it's
I tell
response.
You a little story around that?
Sure.
We made a study what people feel when they say they want to be at home in the hotel. So we made with a word analyst again, a study. He analyzed not what they said, but what they felt, the guest. So what turned out, they didn't want to feel at home. They wanted to feel like in their memory, they felt in their mother's home.
Oh, my goodness.
You know,
mother's home?
In their mother's home, because everything was done there. They didn't have to worry about it. And coaching was happening. But here's a key thing that applies to everybody, to every business. When something went wrong and they went to their mom and said, Mom, I have a real problem. And mom said, come here. She took him in the arm and she didn't call the manager because something was wrong. She didn't say, I called the manager. She said, I am here for you, Mom said. That is the issue of problem resolution. Has to be taught. Every one of our employees taught and certified in problem resolution say, I am here for you. Therefore, like we explained last time, they're empowered, right. Each one of them. They don't say, the mom never said, I call the manager if you have a problem.
Sometimes she said, wait till your dad gets home.
Yeah, but that's a fan.
That was different. Yeah. That was bad news.
That was for negative
That's
news.
Right. That was bad news. You know. Now, I have to pause and ask you this. How, and maybe there's no way to describe, to explain this in our conversation, how did you get behind, people are saying, I want to feel like I'm at home or I'm in sort of the nicer version of my home. Yeah. And somehow you got behind that to discover, no, what they really want is to feel like they are at their mother's home. That's how did you get to that?
Well, as I said, we had focus groups and we used the word analyst, not to hear what they said, but the words that they use in consequence, what they really meant.
By what they said.
And once they heard what I meant, they dug deeper into it. Those are experts to determine the expectation. And that's what we want to find. I mean, well, feel at home. What do you mean? And nobody could really answer it until we dug deeper into that feeling.
They wanted to be at home where they could call their mother at any point in time and have a need met.
Yeah, and when you opened the fridge, there was food that they liked, actually.
And see, don't you think, I mean, I'm drawing a conclusion without any data, but I would assume that dynamic is true in every business, especially any customer service business.
Particularly in the caring. I mean, if they complain, go and complain. What do you say? Call a manager. What do you want? You want to get rid of your problem or even just get rid of your frustration.
Right.
And they say, I don't accept it. I call a manager. Maybe he will accept it, or she. So that is not service. The service is that each employee is there for that guest.
And empowered to
and
solve
empowered
that problem.
To serve the problem.
And expected to solve that problem.
Yeah, sure.
That's amazing.
That's why I said the mother didn't say, I call a manager. The mother said, I'm here for you.
So essentially, regardless of the industries we're in, our customers all essentially want the same thing. Whatever the product is, they want a defect-free product. They want it in a timely way.
Yeah.
And the time changes with age, stage of life, and industry. I mean, to go from 4 minutes to 20 seconds,
right.
So we got to pay attention to that. And then thirdly, they want this done by people who genuinely care. And you would argue that the caring part can more than make up for a defect or a time with
time.
If you have the right people, everything works out right.
But however, go back to the defect. This is a very important piece too. And that's why it's very difficult to discuss this all in a few minutes. Every time I eliminate a defect, it is efficiency. Because if our number one complaint in Buckhead used to be slow service and room service. Guest complain. It took us long time to understand why there was, and that is a story in itself. If we had time, it would be a great story to tell. The problem, efficiency, is if I can eliminate a defect, because a defect means the guest complains I have to redo it or make even amends for it. The more defects I pull out of the organization, the less cost. That's efficiency.
Right.
So that's a key element here. Maybe I throw this story in, if you have time, you can put it in there. Our number one complaint, slow room service. I was still running the hotel because it was our first hotel.
And this is here in Buckhead.
Here in Buckhead.
Ritz.
The very first year, that was our own hotel. I was running it. So what did I do? I called the room service manager. I said, darn it, I told you.
Yeah.
Typical.
Fix this.
Fix it.
Yeah.
And it didn't fix. And it went on. And he was rude to his employees, most likely, and we had achieved nothing. And it went on, and then I studied the Malcolm Borish criteria, etc. I studied and studied and studied, and I came to a total new conclusion. It's a defect that we had to find. So we made a root cause analysis. We said, why? And why is not my knowledge in the office, but the person connected to the process, that means the room service waiter, the cook, we told them, find the reason. And they studied it. They took the order and everything went fine. The order taker, everything went fine. The cook, the waiter, all fine. The busboy, all fine. The cook, fine. They came to the elevator and had to wait. So we involved an engineer in it. We involved Otis in it. They said, all is fine. So they took a chance, sat in the elevator, up and down. And on the fourth floor, a houseman. Houseman supply the maids with linen and everything else.
Right.
Come into the elevator, goes up two floors, blocks the door open, goes out, comes back with linen, goes to another floor, goes down, comes back with linen. So we involved the laundry. What happened? And housekeeping. And housekeeping said, it's laundry. We are short of linen. We have two sets of linen, meaning, and so, and they said, we need three.
So the linen was stopping, was holding up room service.
That's right.
But you would have never connected those
dots. Never connected them.
Wow.
So what did we do? What happened? Here comes the real kicker. The laundry manager gets involved and said, why are we only having two sets of linen, one or three? One is on the bed, one is on the way, and one is in the washing. He said, well, before we opened the hotel, we had a budget problem, and Mr. Schulze eliminated one set of linen.
So it was your fault.
It was my fault.
That's unbelievable. So a decision you made early on ultimately had the unintended consequences slowing down room service. But again, for our podcast listeners, this is such a valuable lesson because it's true that generally speaking, we start blaming people.
We attack the problem rather than the cause.
Then we blame human nature, and eventually we get to systems. And 9 times out of 10, it is a system.
It's a system.
It's a systems issue. So you were smart enough to move beyond trying to find who am I going to fire, and where did we make a hiring problem. So when it came back to you, oh my goodness, this was a decision I made to save money. How did you respond?
Like I tried to pretend I don't know anything about it. No, this is a typical Deming teaching thing. Deming was teaching, it is never the person, it's always the system.
It's always the system. That's one of the things that we embraced years ago. We read, I think it's Peter Senge, is that how you say his last name? Or Senge? The fifth discipline.
Peter Drucker.
No.
Peter Drucker and Churan. Churan, Drucker, and Deming are the teachers, the key to Deming and Churan early, the key teachers of that. And then there are some others in Japan who taught this. And I studied them very careful and realized I always thought I was a great hotelier because I had a German accent.
That's all it would take.
A European accent.
What else does it take?
It didn't only take that. It takes to know the guest and creates those processes behind it and continuously improve the process by elimination of defect. That is efficiency, by the way. It comes with the efficiency. Every time, can you imagine, I wonder how many guests we lost, how many breakfasts we took up and the guest wasn't there anymore because it was ended, they don't want it anymore. The cost of the shortage of the linen was so immensely higher than linen itself. It's just silly.
Right.
You had no more employees because they were running around everything,
And it turned out to be a systems decision to save money early on that cost a lot of money
later. In fact, that I made in this case.
Wow. Well, Horst, this has been absolutely fantastic. And again, if you did not listen to hear last month's conversation with Horst Schulze, please, please, please go back and listen. Before we wrap up, though, Horst, you shared something with me offline a little bit ago that relates to orientation and the importance of the first day on the job and what happens and what is happening for a person emotionally and why it creates somewhat of a different kind of teachable moment. Would you talk about that for just a few minutes as we wrap this
up?
That was powerful.
Sure. It's the last session that we had. We talked about what creates a great employee, and I said it's selection, orientation, training, and sustaining. And back to the orientation. The orientation is so powerful and so important, yet we treat the employee as if they were a machine that comes in. We have to understand something here. Much of what the employee does, being in time, doing the job, caring for the job, is a behavior, and yet behavior cannot be taught. By the time you're 16, the behavior is set in you, and that is going to be the behavior in your life. You learn new things, obviously, but the behavior basically is set. You can't be taught unless there is a significant emotional event taking place in your life. That's the moment when you adopt new behaviors. And guess what? The first day in a job is a significant emotional event. That's why the first day you don't teach function. You teach the behavioral element and the connection elements to your organization and the belief. And that's the moment you can make them part of your organization. That's the moment you say, you're important, you're part, here's what we do and here's why, because they will adapt on the behavior around that. And to waste that time, look at the new employees, the first day they come 20 minutes early, the second 10 minutes, the third 5 minutes, and the fourth day they're 5 minutes late. The significant emotional event is over.
Right. Now, that's so powerful. And you're right, because my tendency is, when I think about orientation, is not to begin with, this is how we do it here, these are the behaviors we want you to do. We begin with mission and vision. We're kind of out there in the intangible world. And by day three, you know, when they're showing up right on time, we've missed that emotional moment. But to begin with,
that's right,
to that disequilibrium of being in a new environment with new people, I'm a little bit off, you know, I'm off balance a little bit, to go right to the heart of these are the behaviors we want you to embrace. We want you to learn new behaviors. What a powerful, powerful idea. And again, I think that's why 20-something years ago, 23 years ago, sitting and watching you do that very thing and thinking to myself, why is he beginning here? I mean, of all the things you could have talked about in orienting this group of people, maids, butlers, bellmen, to the hotel, why did he begin here? We are ladies and gentlemen serving ladies and gentlemen. We are not servants. We are ladies and gentlemen serving ladies and gentlemen. Again, it was an emotional time for me, and I wasn't even looking for a job.
But finally, Andy, I mean, if we as leaders don't love the human beings that come in there, I mean, wait a minute, there's also a spiritual aspect to that. I want to pretend that I'm a pastor here or anything like that, but goodness, love your neighbor. I mean, for me, that's always an overwhelming thing, asking Jesus, what is the greatest of command? Love God, and love your neighbor as yourself. Wow! I mean, that's somebody I want to follow. And wait a minute, who's your neighbor? Or your close neighbor, my opinion, is my wife. And then, aren't your employees your neighbors? Mm. Wouldn't you love these human beings? And if some of them, people tell me they're not worth it, well, that will sort of say, but you have no right to make that judgment. That will show itself. But love your neighbor as yourself. Put that into the equation, for heaven's sake. That has to be in the equation. Even if those that don't believe have to understand, what a powerful, beautiful thing to say, love your neighbor as yourself.
And to love our neighbor as ourselves is to at least give them the same amount of dignity
that
we give ourselves.
Yeah, give them dignity.
And that is...
respect them.
That is what you do so well and did so well, and it really did mark me as a leader. And
I can't thank you
enough. And a lot of other people as well. So thanks for being with us these 2 months on the podcast. And to all our listeners, we want to thank you for joining us as well. I know that you loved this just like I did, and you kind of hate to see it come to an end. As always, please visit our website where you can find our Leadership Podcast Application Guide. And here's why you need to get the application guide. As you listened to our conversation today, no doubt you thought, wow, how can I integrate this into my teaching, my training, and how can I get this information in front of my managers and leaders and the people I work with? And our application guide is designed to help you do just that. You can find it under the podcast tab. It includes takeaways from today's podcast. There's some questions there for reflection, discussion, resources that we discussed, and more. So please be sure to check out andystanley.com today. And we will see you next month at the Andy Stanley Leadership Podcast.